So our small business segment this Thursday really is just about being aware and a little bit more aware of white knights, silver bullets and false prophets. That's what Pablo Fatidis has asked us to perhaps chat about a little bit more this evening. He's the founder, of course, of Auric Business Accelerator. Pablo, thank you so much for joining us this evening. What exactly are white knights, silver bullets and false prophets?
Well, look, there are lots of them around. So the idea of the white knight is, here you are, you're in trouble, and apparently in the days when men were gallant and things were all whatever, based out of fantasy land and honorable. And
yeah, that's when the
story
honorable speak actually came from.
Yeah, there we go. So you know the story of the chap who put down his cape so that the lady stepping off the carriage wouldn't wet her shoe?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the white knight is this guy who charges in his suit of armor, wielding his sword on this big white horse to come save the day. Mm. The silver bullet, of course, is the solution to getting rid of Count Dracula, who's about to suck blood from your neck. And false prophets, well, we know what those are. There are lots of them. And they take the shape. They take many different forms and shapes. And Aribile, right now, South African business owners, especially private business owners, and I was thinking about this quite a bit, because they are the only true investors in the country. The private business owner is the only true investor in any economy. Everybody else is employed. They're the people, if you really think about it, who take their own money and sacrifice their health and family time and whatever else it might be, and invest it in the hope of creating a business that employs people, that generates taxes to pay politicians, that creates investment opportunities for businesses to participate in, that provide investments into all the financial advisory environments, who take those monies and invest in the corporates, which employ corporate CEOs and corporate people in the generation of income. They're the only true investors. And yet they're under assault on a continuous basis in South Africa and around the world.
Why? Why so much assault then in a time when we keep punting how small businesses are the backbone of South Africa's economy and really need to be looked at a whole lot more, how we need to throw a whole lot more of the digital economy at the likes of those?
You know, it's so frustrating because loose lips sink ships. Mm. It means nothing. A politician, a corporate CEO, an individual who is attempting to gain popularity or align themselves to a popular position, stands up on a stage and makes those comments. And they make those comments because those comments are valid statistically. Private businesses are responsible for around 68% of private sector employment in South Africa. Mm. Private businesses defined as businesses employing 50 or fewer people. The second thing is, the fastest rate in tax payments and receipts to SARS come from private businesses that generate between 4 and 17 million rand taxable income. Those are small moving into medium-sized businesses. So that's where the engine of the economy resides. And all the words that are pointed in that direction yield absolutely no policies that are empathetic and workable and understand these private business owners. That's part of the assault that they experience, and that leaves them open to white knights, silver bullets and false prophets.
Sure. Now, when these sort of white knights, silver bullets and false prophets come along, who would you liken them to be then across, you know, not obviously just South Africa, but
No, this is across the world. Yeah. And there's a big list, and we can only talk about a few.
Okay.
So one of my favorite to talk about are a software salesman. Software selling is
pretty much the IT guys. That are just trying to put software into your phone, your computer, any of that?
Into your life, everywhere. Because you mentioned it, you know, there's this whole big drive in the digital economy. And yes, if you don't digitize, you're going to land up in a lot of trouble down the line. If you don't adopt technology in everything you do, you will land up behind everyone else who does, which means you'll land up in a lot of trouble. And when software people come forward to you with what we refer to as either an ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning Management Software, this piece of software that one of the best known versions in the world is SAP. It's a piece of software that digitizes all processes and activities right across your business and gives you real-time data so you can see what's going on. That idea is incredible. It is incredible.
It's exactly what's made the company so successful, right?
It's a wonderful theory in many ways, but I've seen mostly people engaging in those ideas because their businesses aren't ripe and ready for that type of technology. They buy the technology in the hope that it's going to simplify things, give them sight, give them vision, give them control in a difficult environment, and it costs them four small fortunes.
Sure.
Fortune one to buy it, fortune two to install it, fortune three to train your team on it, and fortune four to get rid of it.
So the aim here is to really find the software, and I suppose also the kind of tech that kind of works for you, and not just get caught up in the fact that you're going to need this because the world is moving into digitization.
Completely. And there's a very specific approach to make it work for you. The first is you have to understand what your business stands for.
Yeah.
Why do you do what you do? Yes, to make money. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about its purpose in the world. Why is it valuable to anyone that you would call a customer? And if you can get very good clarity on that, because remember, it's a competitive environment.
Yeah.
You need to distinguish yourself from your competitors. But if you can get clarity on why your existence matters to the customers you serve, the next step after that is to build a business that will be able to communicate with those customers, get them on board as clients and customers, and then fulfill and deliver your promises. When you've understood that sequence of events and you've turned all those activities into organized systems, you can then look at that and say, hey, that piece of software could make that system work more efficiently, more cost-effectively, more easily, and free up the time of my people to do more valuable work. That's the point when you're ready to start buying software, not the point where you're exhausted and someone gives you and sells you a dream of what the software can deliver, only to find out, in fact, that you weren't ready for it.
Sure. Okay. People number two. With regards to so the software salesmen are what? White knights in this case?
They're white knights carrying silver bullets. You know, that shiny disc.
Okay.
And in a beautifully packaged box. Yeah. And
the next ones you speak of here are job seekers.
False prophets. I'm sorry.
False prophets. So? Is that because when you go to an interview as a job seeker, you get there and you say you'd be willing to go the extra mile. You're so intuitive and innovative, and you're going to work long hours. And then when the time comes in the job to be a whole lot more innovative and work the long hours, it's kind of a case of
attitude. You've experienced this, I can see. So, look, there are a couple of things. We have a massive crisis around jobs at the moment in South Africa. There are a lot of people who are very desperate. There are a lot of people who used to feel very safe in their work and realize now that perhaps, even though they've got long tenures in their businesses or their areas of employment, they're not. I don't know if you saw earlier this week, Deutsche Bank has just retrenched 18,000 people worldwide. There are changes coming into the financial services sector that are going to create a lot more retrenchments down the line, whether the economy grows or not, because they've been driven by competitive forces and technology, amongst other things. And certainly what I'm seeing within our organization and with a lot of the clients that I work with, it's really, really hard to firstly get an accurate CV, one that's honest and accurate.
Sure.
I was speaking to a few colleagues of mine saying, you know, LinkedIn doesn't vet the people that post their profiles there.
No, it literally
just neither does Facebook.
Yeah.
Neither does a whole host of other services. They're simply marketplaces,
P-Net,
but you have no idea. Exactly. You have no idea who you're really working with. Secondly, we are remarkably unsophisticated at evaluating a CV. you know, typically you see a CV and there are a whole lot of bullet points on what this person has done and can do, and so it goes. Thirdly, as business owners, we're not always clear why we employ somebody. We think we need to fulfill a job role because A, you're either under pressure, B, you don't have the skills to do it yourself. If you are doing it yourself, it's taking up too much time. Mm. So those pressures make you make hasty decisions. If you're not clear on what exactly you need a person to do, by definition, how do you employ them? That's a strategy called hope. I don't quite know how to market my business, for example.
Yeah.
Aribela, you've got a great, impressive CV. Come on board. Please, I need you. But how do I assess you if I can't market? How do I assess and challenge you in the interview if I can't do it myself?
Yeah, so the only way you'll find the answers, I suppose, as the saying would go, that the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and that you'd have to hire me to know.
Yeah, and South African labor laws don't support that for the private business owner. You know, we sit on the one extreme of labor inflexibility. In, for example, the United States, there's certain states over there where you hire and fire at whim. It's the other extreme. Sure. Both of them are dysfunctional. Both don't work effectively for specifically the small and medium business owner.
Why haven't we come up with a way to do this properly?
I think that it's vastly unpopular in an environment where we have such massive unemployment. And yet the people who can generate the employment want to try before they buy. The three-month idea that is it enough for me to understand whether you can do the job or not often isn't. Because the small business owner employs you and then says, well, please get on with it. I don't have the time to actually manage effectively. And I think that businesses below a certain turnover, annual turnover, should be given a different labor flexibility structure so they can try before they buy and they can create the courage to take the risks that they need in employing people.
Sure. So those are the false prophets then.
Yeah, they could be false prophets.
Okay. Deal makers and advisors. Now, for me, the deal makers are supposed to be your saving grace, right?
Hopefully.
You could call them white knights, I suppose, in this case then, because these are the people who are supposed to help you sort of grow, help you find avenues that you never thought you could have, new revenue streams, for example. But these could be, you know, people that you also need to be very aware of.
Very aware of. You know, right now on LinkedIn, South Africans are being preyed upon. You know, very often you'll see someone typically from some sort of Scandinavian bank as a profile on LinkedIn who has a very profitable proposition for you, and they've looked at your profile, so they claim, and argue that you should make contact with them through a Gmail address, even though they are linked to a bank, and you are left wondering why this very professional serious looking person would want you to contact them on Gmail. So if you are under pressure and if you're looking for opportunity, if you're saying my business is not growing, business sector is not growing, the country is not growing, I need to do a deal that would actually lift the growth, be careful who you work with. Mm. Secondly, deals are incredibly hard to do. Incredibly hard to do. People who make their money through deal making will always sell the deal as a fairly easy way to next level growth or to a direction that you might prosper more effectively than you are currently. And when you're vulnerable, you're going to lend your ear to that type of talk.
Of course, yeah.
But wow, deals are hard to do. They are complicated to do. They are fraught with so much risk. And in fact, globally, how's this for a stat? Globally, acquisitions by corporates, 89% of them, in a recent Harvard Business Review piece of research, were shown to yield zero value to the acquirer.
Sure, zero.
Zero value. They failed. They failed in their promises because they are motivated and driven by organizations that make their livings and earn their revenues from doing deals. The deal done is a deal paid for. A deal not done is a deal not paid for. So think of it from this point of view. If we're in a flat, low-growth economy and my business is to make deals, I'm knocking on your door with an idea in the shape of a deal.
And I mean, I suppose then the advisors fall in the same category, because in some ways, according to this, they could be false prophets, giving you some sense of understanding of your business. But do they actually know what you're looking for?
And very innocently, you know, so I'll give you an example. They're worlds apart. Life in a large corporate is fundamentally different to life in a privately owned business. Culturally, they're different. Psychologically, they're different. Technically, they're very, very different. The way of doing business, the way of approaching business is fundamentally different. And I often see a lot of people who might have retired from corporate life or have found themselves in a position where their corporate opportunities have ended because of the low growth economy, amongst other things, and who then turn around and say, but hang on a minute, I've got 15, 20, 30, 40 years of experience in one part of business. Let's say it is sales, for example, or marketing or operations, pick any area of it. And I've got deep, deep knowledge over here. I've progressed up the corporate ladder. I'm a senior manager or C-suite executive in this space. Now that my life in corporate's ended, I want to play it forward and give back to small, medium businesses which are growing by providing them with this big picture advice. But the fact of the matter is that the lived reality in a small, medium business is that advice is less valuable than action. And action in a small, medium business is always driven on a shoestring budget, if any budget at all.
Sure.
It's got to be crafted and created in such a way that it can be delivered without the backing of the corporate budget you had and without the backing of your team and resource base in the corporate where you're formerly employed. So vulnerable business owners look at the impressive CV, look at the impressive history and say, wow, maybe that's what I need. But, you know, come on board.
Yeah.
And honestly, those individuals are mostly very well intended, but the environments are just fundamentally different.
Acquirers. I mean, them. Now, are we talking about acquirers or people who help in your business in terms of acquiring your product? Or is this just really people who are trying to buy your entire business?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting at the moment. A lot of large corporates, so through no fault of theirs, yours, mine, or anyone else's, can't grow in this economy.
Yeah.
If you really think about it, a very, very big business, it can't move fast, it can't flex, it can't move into smaller markets or emerging markets where new opportunities are appearing. It has to basically run the systems that drive and determine its destiny for it in many ways. And I have started to see, as businesses have attempted to digitize and become more flexible, a number of inquiries from very large corporates into the medium business space saying, Aribile, we want to buy. We're interested in acquiring you. You put down a figure. It's a figure that works for you. It's a figure that they'd look at. It works for them. And you think to yourself as a seller, hang on a minute, this is really exciting. This is really interesting. I might be, for example, 60 years old. I started the business when I was 30. I've had a good run at it, and this is a good way for me to exit. And through that figure, I would earn my pension, amongst other things. Or alternatively, you're 40 something, you've been in it for 20 years. Now you look at the corporate and you say, through them, I've got distribution muscle, I've got investment muscle, I can scale and grow quicker. And the way that these deals happen is you strike the deal, you agree the process, subject to a due diligence.
Yeah.
And that's where the corporate comes in and says, lift up the bonnet, let's see what's in the engine. And if everything is as we said and thought and understood it to be, we will proceed.
Then, yeah.
And mostly, in those instances, if it's nefariously attempted, in other words, the intent is not to acquire, the attempt is to see, learn, understand, and steal process, intelligence, intellectual property, in order for the corporate itself to build out a business to compete in that sector rather than acquire, those deals can go horribly, horribly sour. So if someone does approach you from a corporate to acquire you, get a really good, credible genuine advisor on board to back you and secure the transaction and to prevent that from ever happening.
Sure. I really want to focus on this last one. Hopefully, we'll just continue and get as much, enough time on this. Family and friends, the last one.
Okay. That's all of them. White knights, silver bullets, and false prophets. It's a horrible place, that. You know, South Africans are remarkable, huh? Because we have actually, irrespective of all the noise, don't believe what you see on Twitter. Don't focus on the news that's negative. My lived experience, black, white, male, female, religious, a-religious, call it what you will. South Africans are remarkably empathetic people. And the problem with being empathetic when you're running a business and a nephew, uncle, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, family member or friend loses a job in some part of the economy and knocks on your door and says, "Hi, cousin Aribile," or "Uncle Aribile," or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
"You know, I've got some really good skills. Is there an opportunity for me over here?" It's incredibly hard to say no, because what happens on Friday night dinner or Sunday lunch or at the mosque on Friday? What happens in those environments where families get together four events, and Uncle Aribile has not been kind enough to give nephew Johnny a chance? It makes it very difficult. So very often we take on individuals like that, and we would tend to, because they are family and friends, we would tend to project very fine qualities on them. And I have seen very often when that doesn't transpire, it is a messy, horrible place to get out of. And a huge distraction. So all good intentions, but beware of false prophets, silver bullets, and white knights.
Sure. Absolutely interesting way to actually put it. I could certainly say that I'd never thought of calling them these three elements as well. And quite interesting there. Pablo, really appreciate it as well this evening. Pablo Fatidis there, giving us a sentiment of how small businesses should be aware of all these elements, which are aimed at helping, but in some way could also pull you back in many ways. Be aware, South Africa, and beyond, of course. These are not just local trends themselves, but certainly ones that could hurt even further.